This is a quick TLDR. I'm basically going to say, oh, TLDR means too long, didn't read. I'm basically going to say that critical race theory, CRT, has become a very popular pedagogy in the world of teaching that defines the world as being essentially Western hegemonic, Western supremacy, and the deconstructionism, the postmodern deconstruction tools enabling CRT have in fact filtered into the K through 12 teaching pedagogy, and as a result, filtered down to kids who are influenced by that pedagogy. For example, when I taught creative writing, my teacher slash mentor, Ginny Little, was really excited about whole language as a pedagogy. That influenced everything she did in the classroom. You don't need to teach CRT to students in the same way that you don't need to teach the classes that you took in your teaching school to the students. Those classes that you took in teacher's school, an education program, filter into your class teachings. So to say CRT is not taught in schools is legalistically correct, because there are no classes on how to teach K through 12 kids using critical race theory as a structure for history, literature, and civics. But it is part of the pedagogy itself, and that how it influences choosing of topics, choosing of historical narratives, choices of literature, choices of philosophy, choices of civics lessons, and everything in between. So that is my opinion. My opinion is that CRT is most certainly being taught in schools, but it's not literally being taught in schools. In the same way that when I learned whole language pedagogy, I didn't go into classes and say, hey kids, I have a new way of teaching you. Let me give you insight into how to teach K through 12 kids. What I did is I brought the tools of whole language into the classroom with me, which informed the way I taught. So any of you who are defending the concept of CRT not filtering into schools as a result of pedagogical influence are either willfully naive or intentionally obstructionist, because you know it's just a matter of time before Western hegemonic imperialist white America completely freaks the hell out and shuts this down, because they're going to 100% perceive it as vanguardism or Marxist vanguard of the proletariatism, or a reinterpretation of workers unite, workers rise, and cast off the chains of oppression. And you don't have much time. It's going to blow up in everybody's face real soon. And I see why you're doing it. But everybody else can see that you're doing it too. So be careful. Faites attention. And good luck. Bye. Hey there. This is Chris Cast, Season 3, Episode 3. My name's Chris Abraham, and this episode is going to be everything I do and don't know about critical race theory. Now, I am a cisgender 51-year-old man. I am white. I am American. And I grew up in Hawaii, but I was still white in Hawaii, and I still had white entitlement in Hawaii, even though I was a minority there. So I'm not going to use any of that stuff as excuses. Mostly, I'm just going to address everything in terms of my understanding of logic, my understanding the history of critical race theory, and some graduate level education I had in the space. So that's it. Politically, all this other stuff, I'm not going to talk about how it's being used, what the intent of it is, or anything else like that. I'm just going to sort of try to explain it from my, I used to be a different person before I became your crazy Uncle Chris. So let's get into it after the break. Welcome back. This is Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. This is season 3, episode 3. And I am talking about critical race theory. And it is the only thing that I'm addressing here is that the media, the news, everybody. I live in Virginia. I don't have kids, never had kids. Am not a good enough uncle to be close enough to anybody else's kids, all that other kind of thing. So the only education I've ever received was before I was 6, I went to preschool in a Jewish preschool in Midtown Manhattan. And when I was 6, we moved to Hawaii, and I went to a public school called Aliamanu Elementary, and it was in an area called Salt Lake, and it was, there were a lot of military kids, because we were close to the airport and relatively close to an Air Force base. And so there were some Haole kids. Haole is Hawaiian for unwelcome visitors, which basically means crackers. Haole's white, white people. And loved it. Loved Aliamanu Elementary. Was scared of Aliamanu Intermediate, so I begged my parents to send me to an all-boys Catholic school named St. Louis School for Boys. At that point, it was 7th through 12th grade. Before now, it's K through 12. And before my class, it was 9 through 12. So I believe my class was the first class to have intermediate school kids, middle school kids. So that's my only experience. I loved it. I loved Catholic school. I loved all-boys school. I enjoyed the education I got. It was very much reading, writing, arithmetic. There was religion class. There was sex education. I feel like I don't have anything to compare it to except for when I did a school swap as student body president. I did a school swap with Punahou, Barack Obama's school. And it was so much better. It was, for example, I sat in a class that was literature in the context of history. So it was a large classroom with a Socratic method. People, the students were in a giant circle in chairs. And there were two teachers in the class. One was a literature teacher and one was a history teacher. And they taught literature in historical context. And it was amazing to me. But I don't want to, I don't want to compare. I went to GW. I went to University of East Anglia. I went to University of Hawaii. I liked, everywhere I go, I like the schooling I'm in. I've never studied in an Ivy League school or Georgetown or Johns Hopkins or anything like that. I've never studied in a junior college either. But what I did study at GW is I studied American literature And as I got closer to the end of my 4 years, I took some graduate level classes, and the two classes that I took were one class on Marxist feminist theory, and the other class was African American literary theory. And this was back in 1993, 1992, 1993. And it was an academic study, but it was all about Marxism, of course, but in terms of the context of the historical goals of Marxism, which is to redefine the narrative of history. And redefining the narrative of history is to turn the hegemonic narrative of the West on its head. And the way you do that is you deconstruct the narrative, and obviously the strategy is called deconstructionism. And it was, I guess, was it from the French school? I think it might have been the French school. Deconstructionism is from the French school. Sorry about the airplane right outside. I don't know if you can hear it. Hey Google, volume 10. Hey Google, who wrote There's Nothing Beyond the Text?
According to Wikipedia, Jacques Derrida was an Algerian-born French philosopher best known for developing a form of semiotic analysis known as deconstruction, which he analyzed in numerous texts and developed in the context of phenomenology. He is one of the major figures associated with post-structuralism and postmodern philosophy.
So, the entire world of critical race theory is based on postmodernism. And hey Google, what is postmodernist theory?
On the website Britannica.com, they say, postmodernism, also spelled postmodernism, in Western philosophy, a late 20th century movement characterized by broad skepticism, subjectivism, or relativism, a general suspicion of reason, and an acute sensitivity to the role of ideology in asserting and maintaining political and economic power.
So this is the blueprints of critical race theory. This is an entirely different way of looking at things. It's post-structuralist, it's postmodern. Hey Google, define modernism.
According to Wikipedia, postmodernism is a broad movement that
Hey
developed in the
Google,
mid to late.
what is modernism?
According to Wikipedia, modernism is both a philosophical movement and an art movement that arose from broad transformations in Western society during the late 19th and early 20th centuries.
Hey Google, what is the philosophy of modernism?
According to Google Books, this work has been selected by scholars as being culturally
Hey
important and is
Google,
part of the.
define the philosophy of modernism. Hey Google, what is modernism, the philosophy?
On the website courses.lumenlearning.com, they say, modernism was essentially based on a utopian vision of human life and society and a belief in progress or moving forward.
So the irony is that in order to move society forward, there needs to be a collective narrative, and this collective narrative is owned by somebody. And unfortunately, in the concept of progress and moving things forward, the mantle of that in America and in the West has always been on the shoulders of whiteness. Perceived white power, actual white power, a concept of culture as defined by white Western Europeans, all of these things create a narrative that is that turns people of color and women into background characters. And so Jacques Derrida and Hélène Cixous and the entire postmodern French movement created this world where there's nothing beyond the text. And which is to say, the context of our modern world is not important. It's only important what is written into a particular artwork, a particular philosophy, that it shouldn't matter who does the creation, who does the narrative, and so forth. That context is dead. But there also, it worked with feminism and then into the academy as tools of deconstructionism. And postmodernism and deconstructionism became a movement with its real flaw and its most common popular flaw, because everything's a lot more nuanced than this. Its popular flaw is that deconstructionism based on postmodernism is a destructive theory that has no real ideas for what to rebuild in out of the rubble. Hey, Google, who wrote the quote, I cannot use the master's tools to build the master's house?
Lord Audrey. On the website projectmyopia.com, they say, Lord Audrey, the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. Penguin Modern, 23, Penguin, 2018.
So I totally botched the quote, but yeah, the master's tools cannot dismantle the master's house. So deconstructionism, along with postmodernism, created linguistic and literary tools, philosophical tools that can dismantle the master's house. And these tools, this strategy, has evolved over time. Like, I'm 51 years old, and I started learning about deconstructionism in the early 90s and studied Jacques Derrida and Hélène Cixous and Audre Lorde and explored the Black Arts Movement and explored Hey, Google, who wrote The Signifying Monkey?
Henry Louis Gates Jr. wrote The Signifying Monkey.
So Henry Gates Jr. wrote an amazing book called The Signifying Monkey. And all these books are really important tools with which you can dismantle societal racism. You can dismantle societal, systemic sexism, racism. You can dismantle a white supremacy with them. So to say that critical race theory isn't taught in schools is a red herring. The people from my class of academia, although I'm not an academic, but the people from my class of academia and the people after me, since deconstruction. Hey, Google, when did deconstructionism become popular?
On the website designingbuildings.co.uk, they say, deconstructivism developed out of the postmodern style and first gained widespread attention in 1988 with an exhibition entitled Deconstructivist Architecture in New York's Museum of Modern Art. The exhibition featured the work of architects such as Frank Gehry, Rem Koolhaas, and Zaha Hadid.
So I started college in 1988, so it took a little while to get to me because obviously I'm not going to study deconstructionism as an undergrad, really, in a school like GW. But I studied feminist theory and African-American theory, and it was definitely full steam ahead when I was studying those things in 1992, 1993. And so It has matriculated into more and more academic systems. These tools are very powerful, they're very interesting, and they're really a great way to dismantle all the greats, to take down everybody who had hegemonic control over this modernist entitlement, this movement into a future, which is defined by Star Trek and defined by a future of Western global hegemony, a future that is defined by capitalism, by white Christian values, by this idea that Hemingway and James Joyce and William Shakespeare are the definition of culture, and culture flows to America from Europe, and in that dominance of the rational, scientific-based, even if you will, enlightened liberal democracy, all of those things are de facto white supremacist. They haven't quite gotten to the point to say that truth, values, in the American way, that they have yet to completely define the American way of life and the American dream as decidedly white supremacy, but it is right there in front of us. The hegemony of Western Europe and of the United States and of even Canada and the UK is being dismantled as being unfair players in a world stage. And in a world stage, they're gaming the system, and they need to be overthrown. So by the tools of postmodernism, deconstructionism, decontextualism, redefining ownership, redefining control, narrative, rereading history, reinterpreting all literature, history, art, and science, reconsidering heroes and players, re-examining the canon and redefining the canon. When I went to university and studied American literature, it was called Western canon. Western canon is a Western supremacy concept. Western canon is white supremacy. Socrates, Aristotle, all the Greeks, philosophers, all the British philosophers, all the American philosophers, all the French philosophers, concepts of masonry, concepts of enlightenment, concepts of the church, concepts of Christianity, all these things are all built into the manifest destiny known as modernism. Now, that needs to be completely deconstructed, and as a result, critical race theory is the tool with which to do that. You do not teach the tool. For example, if I were to say that neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, is the tool that I use to manipulate people into agreeing with me, or coercing people, or I use a strategy of love bombing, or, you know, any other cultish movement, any other cult movement. Hey, Google, what is neuro-linguistic programming? Hey, Google, what is neuro-linguistic programming?
According to Wikipedia, neuro-linguistic programming is a pseudoscientific approach to communication, personal development, and psychotherapy created by Richard Bandler and John Grinder in California, United States, in the 1970s.
Hey, Google, what is love bombing?
According to Wikipedia, love bombing is an attempt to influence a person by demonstrations of attention and affection. It can be used in different ways and for either positive or negative purposes. Psychologists have identified love bombing as a possible part of a cycle of abuse and have warned against it.
So there's any number of strategies that you can use to manipulate people. You can manipulate them, but none of these strategies, there are no manipulation strategies. There are no hearts and mind strategies that you literally teach someone. You only teach the other people who are going to be using these tools, right? So we call this pedagogy, right? Hey, Google, what is the definition of pedagogy?
Here's the definition of pedagogy: the method and practice of teaching, especially as an academic subject or theoretical concept.
So CRT is a quasi-pedagogical tool. And so when you go into a fifth grade class, you don't teach kids how to teach. You teach kids the curriculum. In the same way, while CRT is not being taught in Virginia schools, the CRT pedagogical framework is being used to teach kids in schools. Hey, Google, what is whole language pedagogy?
On the website verywellfamily.com, they say, also known as balanced literacy, the whole language approach is an educational philosophy that teaches children to read by using strategies that show how language is a system of parts that work together to create meaning.
So that's another pedagogical strategy, right? So all these strategies, you don't bring into the classroom and literally teach them. When they say things like, we only teach CRT in law schools, it's because law schools, lawyers are being taught to be professionals. They're being taught to be professionals. The question is CRT being taught in schools of education? Is CRT being taught in Harvard School of Education? Is it being taught at Yale School of Education? Is it being taught at GW School of Education? Is it being taught at graduate level courses to get master's degrees in education so that you can become a teacher? Are they being taught at Kalamazoo Teachers College? Hey, Google, is there a place called Kalamazoo Teachers College?
Sure. Here's some helpful information I found on the web.
Western State Normal School, Western State Teachers College. Okay, now it's called Western Michigan University. But when I taught there in 95, there was still a Kalamazoo Teachers College. So at teachers colleges, you know, which are 2 or 4 year colleges, graduate school or whatever, are they teaching these tools, right? So to say we are not teaching CRT to students is the worst kind of lie, and it's really easy to see through. The question is, are you using CRT strategies to redefine, in other words, deconstruct a Western hegemony, a Western supremacy concept of the history of America, the history of literature, as being a complete facade where a white supremacist system put in place a suppression against minority voices. And in truth, the history of America, the history of literature, the history of voices, the history of women, the history of Black Americans, the history of Asian Americans, and so forth, have been single-handedly suppressed, a way of existing, a way of out of existence, in order to prop up a false narrative of Western imperialism, Western control, and Western superiority, as defined by the West, the Western white cisgender male. Now, that sounds to me like what the very definition of Black Lives Matters attempts to do. Black Lives Matters is, by definition, founded by a trained Marxist. I don't know why we need to hide these things. I studied feminist theory in a context of Marxist feminist theory. I know that in the world of literary theory, academia, education, historical perspective, and so forth, I mean, Karl Marx was an amazing historian, an amazing satirist. He was an amazing writer. But I do know that historically, from the very beginning, community organization is by its very nature an extremely progressive, sometimes socialistic, and oftentimes Marxist method of hearts and minds. I mean, it is the number one, number two, number three strategy of the vanguard of the proletariat. Hey Google, what is the vanguard of the
According to Wikipedia, in the context of the theory of Leninist revolutionary struggle, vanguardism involves a strategy whereby the most class-conscious and politically advanced sections of the proletariat or working class, described as the revolutionary vanguard, form organizations in order to draw larger sections of the working class.
There you go. I mean, it might not be based on working class now. It might be based on gender. It might be based on race. But it is... there are extreme amounts of vanguarding going on at the moment. And you know, that is, and, you know, conveying this new world, I guess, things have moved on since 1993. Back in the day, one would say that deconstructionism doesn't have a strategy for rebuilding, but I dare say that build back better is the definition of rebuilding, the deconstruction and dismantling, not using the master's tools, using maybe the Marxist tools, using the Marxist tools to dismantle the master's house, in an Audre Lordean sort of way, and then rebuilding it with a build back better globalist strategy. And I guess in many ways, even though, you know, COP whatever is in Davos and everything else, don't forget, guys, that this entire strategy might be being used. I mean, I still see all white dudes. I still see kleptocrats. I still see monarchs, I still see oligarchs, I still see rich white men from Europe and from the West defining what the future of Build Back Better is going to be. Old white men still define what Build Back Better is defined as. So it's important to see, you know, where you borrowed your tools. And who really is the tool master behind the tools. But in order, if you go ahead and abashedly say, you know, like, wasn't me, we're not teaching CRT, wasn't me, we're not teaching it in the schools, no, wasn't me, we're not teaching it to kids in curriculum, wasn't me, we're only teaching it in law schools, wasn't me, then you know for a fact that it's not authentic, that you're not being truthful, and that there's a lot of lying going on. I mean, I hate hypocrisy. I think once my sus, if you will, Spidey stuff comes up, I just did one yesterday on Kyle Rittenhouse and the gun stuff, I just feel like I need to address this kind of thing. And I think it's really being inauthentic. And since this is so long, I'm going to go ahead and do a TLDR at the beginning of this podcast and sort of just give away the beans. Anyway, I'm done now. I think I've run out of steam. I'll be back to let you know how you can contact me, and we'll talk in a second. Hey there, Chris Abraham here. Chris Cast, Season 3, Episode 3. 33 is a magic number. You can reach me at chrisabraham.com. You can email me at chris@abraham.su. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Abraham, Instagram at Chris Abraham. I think Christopher Abraham on TikTok. I'm on Snapchat. I'm on Telegram. I'm on Signal. I'm on WhatsApp. You can find those if you need my phone number at +1-202-352-5051. You can text me at that. But if you call me, I won't answer. If you want to schedule a call, I'm at calendly.com/ChrisAbraham/15. If you want to email me, like I said, chris@abraham.com. On No Agenda Social, I'm chris@noagendasocial.com. And that might be it. I'm also on YouTube at Chris Abraham, youtube.com/ChrisAbraham. And I've got this podcast, ChrisCast, based on anchor.fm/ChrisAbraham. But I'm everywhere, and I could really use your help. Please give me stars, write reviews. You can do it on Apple Podcasts. You can do it on Stitcher, on iHeartRadio, you can do it on your, you can do it on Spotify, you can do it on Anchor, you can also do it on your app. I know that Podcast Addict has a place where you can review and share. All the other ones do, I'm sure. And that would be much obliged. Until next time, I'll talk to you soon. Mahalo.